This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. If you have a kid or know a kid somewhere between the ages of 7 and 17, you know that when they don't know the answer to a question, they don't say, "I don't know." They say, Saying, "I don't know," of course, implies in one way self-reflection. "I don't know the answer to this question," it says, "and this disquiets me slightly." Saying, implies, "Leave me alone, I don't care. It's not a big question. Someone else will figure it out," which makes sense, really, because any kid between the ages of 7 and 17 knows that his answer doesn't really matter because he's about to be told what to do anyway. It's a conservation of energy thing. Why waste all of that breath and brain power enunciating the phrase, "I don't know," when you can just shrug and say, and keep scrolling? So last week, someone asked me if I thought the big strikes of 2023 were a tipping point, to use one of those annoying pop phrases. I didn't know the answer, but I knew enough not to say, because whether or not these past few months have been a tipping point, they have done one thing for sure. They've changed the answer that everyone in the entertainment industry gives. And I mean everyone, writers, executives, lawyers, directors, agents, all of us who've been riding this incredible gravy train, we've all been giving the same answer to a lot of questions like, how are we going to measure an audience? How are we going to pay for creative work? How are we going to share and mitigate financial risk? How are we going to develop projects more cheaply? To which everyone has been saying, But now that answer has changed from a cranky and distracted and spoiled, to a more realistic, more frightened, "I don't know." But, you know, frightened is good. Frightened means we're all finally paying attention. And the good news, in a way, is that every single one of those questions is really just one question, which is, how are we going to make money in show business? So here's one way. A few weeks ago, I was standing outside a small jazz club in New York City, which I know is a really irritating way to begin something. But just to clarify, I was standing outside the jazz club, checking something on my phone. It's not like I was going to go inside and listen to jazz and be a sophisticated person. I think I was looking at the search results for falafel near me and doing that thing where you're reading your phone but also walking slowly in a zigzaggy way, making everyone behind you very angry. So as I was locating my falafel, I heard a group of people heading into the jazz venue. It's down a flight of stairs on West 10th Street. And as they were checking in with the bouncer, side note, it's still kind of nice that they check everyone's ID, no matter how gray and tired you look. It's a nice little grace note to the alcohol control regulations. Anyway, so as they were getting out their IDs and checking in, they were informed that the place has a 2-drink minimum and a small cover charge. I don't remember what the charge was exactly, but it's a lot less than a movie ticket. But the group just stopped, and they put their wallets back into their pockets. And one asked, "Wait, there's a cover?" in the tone of voice that suggested that this was an unheard-of surcharge, some kind of trick, one of those, "well, that's how they get you" deals. And the group grumbled in agreement at this basic attitude, and they marched off, or tried to, because I was in front of them zigzagging, and now I was doing it on purpose, because the jazz club is basically a bar plus musicians, and if you walk in to drink, then the musicians end up playing for free, basically. They've lugged their upright basses and trombones and whatever else they're planning to play across town. I mean, the tambourine guy has it easy, but there aren't many jazz arrangements that call for a tambourine. And then they go down the stairs, they have to pack themselves at one end of the narrow space, and then play for the next 4 hours. And if you just pay the musicians, the bartender or the waitstaff just hang around, hoping that you'll pay a little extra, maybe a tip, even though you're taking up prime real estate. The point is, it's easy to think that all of this should be, you know, free for some reason. That people should just play music or pour drinks on spec, kind of like those early web businesses where they just trusted that they'd figure out how to make money later. Now, I don't think the group that refused to pay the cover charge were bad people. I mean, everybody gets to spend their money in their own idiosyncratic way. That's my belief. And in fact, I think they're a lot like the rest of us. In the business of entertainment, you're either paying a cover charge and a minimum, or you're sitting through a sales pitch for something. It's either a door charge, your Netflix subscription, say, or it's a 30-second spot you have to sit through. It's fashionable now to look down on what we call the advertising model in the entertainment business. We used to just call that the model for how two gigantic industries, TV and radio, got huge. But, you know, "I hate commercials," is what people say. Just those damn commercials, people huff, when they're explaining why they hate broadcast television, as if they'd otherwise be using that 30 or 45 seconds for, you know, important research or meaningful conversations with loved ones. And maybe there are too many commercials. And maybe they are just dumb, but that's really just a matter of making better ones, funnier ones, memorable ones that cause the viewer to look up from the phone. The point is, even though it's perfectly rational, even fair, to ask an audience to pay a cover charge and a minimum, there are people, and maybe we're all those people sometime, who will just put their wallets away and keep moving. Maybe the bouncer at the top of the stairs to the jazz club should have said, when the group balked at the cover, "All right, let's do this another way. Are you happy with your car insurance? Or are you aware that Abilify works with your current antidepressant medications? Or are you tired of chips that break off in the dip? Do you have 30 seconds? So when Amazon and Netflix and probably every other streaming service announced that they were adding a new tier to the subscription offerings, an ad-supported tier, where you pay a little and have to watch ads, they were just using the same model, a cover and a minimum. A little for the musicians, a little for the wait staff. Everybody's happy. Everybody, of course, except the customers, some of whom will just march off to the next place that doesn't charge anything, like Tubi, I guess, or at least anything close to the usual cover and minimum, which means that they'll stay at the low Netflix ad tier of $7 a month. The Amazon ad tier, by the way, is about $9 a month, so my guess is that something called price discovery will work its magic and these two numbers will get closer together eventually. And they may even approach zero, because once show business realizes again that people would rather watch an ad than pay out, you know, actual cash, the trick will be finding new ways to sell ads or ad-related products. That's sort of how it's always been in show business, always trying to find a couple of other money streams. A few years ago, a good friend of mine in New York opened a very cool coffee place. It's on Park Avenue South in the Madison Park area, and it's a beautiful spot. The room is copper and peach and bright and cheerful. The drinks are delicious. It's one of those places where you can get a really excellent normal cup of coffee or something more complicated and fancy. And no matter what you order, you get friendly, unpretentious service and no lecture on growing climates or berry notes. It's called Felix Roasting Company. It's on Park at 31st. And the reason I'm telling you this is because, well, first, the owner is a friend of mine. I want him and his business to do well. But also because of this, I went in there once to meet somebody for a cup of coffee. And as we stood at the counter ordering, my friend appeared. Readings were exchanged, and I think a silent message was sent between my friend, the owner, and the guy at the register, because when I pulled out my money, I was told, "Oh, no, it's fine." And on the register display, where it would usually tell me what I owed, it said $0.00, and then next to that, in all caps, the word influencer, which I found out later is the code some places use to track this sort of thing when someone with some kind of clout appears in the establishment. I don't have any clout, really. I can't imagine that I fit even the loosest and most generous definition of influencer on Instagram. I mean, I'm on Instagram, but I don't have many followers. But the influencers I see there are mostly people posting pictures of themselves crossing the street wearing outfits or enjoying a cocktail wearing outfits. And while I knew on some level that both the cocktails and the outfits were probably free, it never crossed my mind that I would at some point be in that category. When I was first starting out in the TV business, every season, every writer had to sign a paper, a contractual promise never to take money from any entity in exchange for plugging a product in a script. It was called Plug-Ola, after the Pay-Ola scandal in the radio business in the 50s, where DJs were taking money from record companies to play certain songs in heavy rotation. And it was illegal, and we were required to promise never to do it. Until a few years later, when the TV business was looking for a little more revenue and started to do product placement, which is the soft core term for Plug-Ola, and writers and producers were required to promise that they would do it. So it went from forbidden to compulsory in about 18 months, which is impressive, even for a craven and amoral place like the television business. I mean, they don't even call it product placement anymore. Now they call it brand integration, which almost sounds like it's making the world a better place. So we've gone from Plug-Ola to product placement to brand integration to the granular individual influencer, which our friends in social media would say is the distributed version of the older model, but it's really just the same thing. Only instead of a lot of high-priced camera equipment and working set, influencers only need someone to take their picture holding a cocktail and looking dreamily into the middle distance or crossing a street looking jaunty to succeed at Plug-Ola. Now, I'm pretty sure I'll never get asked to do either one of those things, although I do enjoy cocktails, and I often cross the street, but I am not, despite the register display, an influencer. That said, I do know a great cup of coffee when I have one, and I do know that my friend's new place, Felix Roasting Company on Park Avenue South, is one of my favorites. And if you're in New York looking for a lovely and charming place to take a break, maybe I'll see you there. And if I do, will you please take my picture while I stare in another direction and then send it to me so I can post it? So the answer to the question, how are we going to make money going forward, shouldn't be what it's been. And doesn't have to be what it is now, which is, I don't know. It'll be closer, I think, to how do we used to do it? How are they doing it? I mean, after all of this, you know, all of this stuff, maybe we're about to reinvent the reinvented business into exactly what it's always been, just with a slightly updated delivery system, which is how we've always done it. And that's it for this week. Next week, writing troubles. For The Ankler, this is Rob Long with Martini Shot.